These were the monks who grew up is Star Wars. And I have to learn from them what happens in Star Wars, because that was after my time. And they say that there's one of the leaders there, Darth Vader, who also very powerful, but no one knew, because always was wearing a hood or something. He said one of the moments was actually, they took off the hood and found out who this Darth Vader was. And they said it was very Buddhist, because when they took off the hood, there was no one in there. Now that's very, very Buddhist. But anyway, I think I saw that, so I don't know what they're talking about. But the emperor's image is like five pieces of clothing cover the whole emperor, so you don't know even if the emperor is a boy or a girl. You don't know whether it's Chinese or Anglo, African or Asian or South Indian. You don't know, because all is covered. So if you want to know what this powerful emperor is, you have to take off the five pieces of clothing. So then you can see directly what this emperor is. And that's the simile. The mind is like the emperor, and is always covered in the five senses of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and physical touch. So we can never truly understand what this powerful mind is. We can think about it, we can be logical about it, infer what it is, but we never really get it right. In fact, some people think there's no such thing as a mind, it's just some byproduct of the brain. I know very different. And Buddhism teaches a much different than that. But all of your arguments will never get you anywhere. You need direct experience. So how do we take off those five senses so we can see what's inside, what's left, when you don't see, hear, smell, taste, or touch? That is the job of meditation. Now, to give you an understanding how it works, again, there's a young man growing up in England. I was a Buddhist when I was only 16, and it was very hard to find places where you could meditate. I already mentioned, I think, in the first talk, that one of the places I went to do a retreat was in the Zen monastery in the north of England. That was where the teacher came around with a big stick. And if you were creeping behind the monk at the back of the stage, you'd get whacked. But at that monastery, when we did our meditation, it was very different than what I had been taught before. We were all on a bench on two sides of a hall, and we had to face a wall, a simple whitewashed wall, with our eyes open. It was meditating with your eyes open. I never recommend that these days. It's much better to keep your eyes closed. But we had to do this. That was the recommendation. That was the advice. And so I was always willing to take advice, to experiment, to see what would happen. And so as I had my eyes open, just watching the wall, a strange thing happened. Now this would only happen if you've done enough basic meditation to stop thinking and dreaming. Because most people, they watch the white wall, but they weren't really watching it. They were fantasizing and dreaming and planning and going through the whole repertoire of past memories. So you had to have the basic training just to be quiet, to be still, basically to be mindful. No thoughts, just being here. See what happens now. And so I was calm enough not to have any thoughts in my mind, just watching this wall, not knowing really what I was supposed to be doing or what's supposed to happen. And then it happened, the wall vanished. It's a big brick wall, maybe stone wall. One moment it was there, and now it was gone. Many of you may be afraid when weird things happen, but this was the late 60s, early 70s in England, the hippie time, Sergeant Pepper, the Lucy was Guy with Diamonds time. This was a time, for those of you my age, when weird things were cool. So we liked weird things. And remember, I used to look for weird stuff by going to houses looking for ghosts. Now, with my friend, Professor Bernard Carr, and a couple of other friends. Yeah, we wouldn't run away from ghosts. We would run towards them. Strange, but I was always interested and fascinated, with the world, and I was part of the world. I wanted to investigate, discover it. But anyway, there you were, looking, meditating, middle of the day, watching the wall, and then the wall vanished, disappeared. That was strange, but instead of being scared, you tried to investigate, contemplate. Why did a wall vanish like that? And it became clear after a while that this is just the nature of the sense of sight. It's the same with the nature of all of your five senses. Your brain, which controls those five senses, only can notice things which change. Even the sound of the aircon in this room. Now you are aware of it. In a few seconds, and you will not know when, you won't be able to notice the aircon anymore. Because it doesn't change. Even in English, there's a word for that, the ambient noise. The ambient noise soon disappears because it doesn't change. It's a constant background sound. And that was exactly what was happening with the sense of sight. Because it was, I never experienced that before, it was really quite significant. And that opened the door to many other insights into the nature of our five senses. We only notice things which change. The wonderful kindness and trust and responsibility of your partner, you don't notice it. It's constant. They make one mistake. You notice that. We only notice things which change. We don't notice what's always there. But anyway, this particular case, the sense of seeing. I was watching a white wall and it never changed. My mind was peaceful enough. I wasn't watching my thoughts. I was totally focused on that wall. Because nothing changed, the brain turned off the sense of sight. Involuntary, automatic, it just turned off. There was no seeing anymore. And from that, I realized that part of this part of meditation is learning how to be still enough that your senses turn off. Stillness causes things to disappear. Now that's so common to your experience, but we're focusing on it now because it lets you understand what meditation is, how it works, and what your duties are when you are sitting down meditating. Close your eyes. If you close your eyes, it's like looking at a white wall because it's the inside of my eyelids I see. In a bright room, you can sometimes see the red because the light is strong, it's shining through your blood vessels, you can see the colour red. Now I actually see it mostly dark. But after a few seconds, I won't notice seeing anymore. Because it doesn't change, it turns off. So in order to find out what's behind those five senses, to take away the clothes of the emperor. He closed her eyes, and see if you can notice, after a few seconds you're not seeing anything, you're not seeing black, the sense of sight is turned off. Smell is very easy to turn off. It's not one of the strong senses. Even though when you're a baby you have a very strong sense of smell, and animals like dogs have an enormously powerful sense of smell, we don't develop that, so it's a very easy one to turn off. It's very good that a way to turn off the sense of smell, please, if you do have indigestion, and if you're one of those people who passes wind a lot, then because if what's person sitting behind you, the sense of smell will suddenly change. So out of compassion for everybody, if you do have indigestion and you pass a lot of wind up your backside, please, out of compassion for others, sit in the back so there's no one behind you. That's compassion. So now I know why Angie and Eileen are sitting in the back. Don't know how it is. But anyway, that usually goes pretty quickly. So, sense of smell is easy to turn off. Sense of taste is easy to turn off. Now, again, can you notice the taste of your saliva in your mouth? Yeah, you can now. After a few seconds, it'll just disappear by itself. So, those two senses, smell and taste, are so easy to turn off. Now you get this, and the sense of sight as well. The two difficult ones are physical feelings and sound. Which is one of the reasons we ask people, when you are meditating, please be quiet. So, if you do have to move, move quietly, turn off your mobile phones during meditation. I have to tell people that, you know, there's calmness, but for technology as well, if a mobile phone comes off while other people are meditating, and it's not just bad karma for you, it's bad karma for your phone. In its next incarnation, it will be reborn as a parking meter, which is the lowest form of life for technology. Either that or a speed camera, whatever it is, it's a really bad incarnation for your high-tech iPhone. So, turn it off. Otherwise, it just disturbs people. Take a long time calming down their sense of hearing. And then it wakes up again with the noise. Even opening and closing doors. Be quiet. And if you can do that, there's no reason why you can't. Even burglars. Burglars have learned the art of going into a room without anybody hearing them, and leaving the room without no one knowing they've left. But you're supposed to be much more advanced than burglars. But those who've been sharing a room with someone else, it's amazing that these people you share the room with, they bang the doors, when they make a cup of tea, the people can be so noisy. So if you are sharing a room with somebody in this hotel, and they are sleeping or they are meditating, when you open the door to go in, imagine you're a burglar. Open the door so quietly, and you can close it so mildly. And you walk without making a sound. Why can't you do that? If anything, from this retreat, you can get a new job working for the Secret Service of Singapore. But anyway, people can do that if they put in the care and the effort. So try and calm down all noise. So that when people are meditating here, all the sound disappears. And their sense of hearing turns off. Real deep silence. Now, of all of those, again, the hardest must be the sense of physical touch. There's always an ache, there's always a pain, there's always hot, there's always cold, there's always something going on in our body. Which is why I put a lot of effort and attention when you start meditating to make sure you are physically comfortable. Nice chairs to sit on, comfy cushions, stones, whatever you wish to meditate on. Please look after your body. And again, I am surprised at all these suggestions which I have made. Why Bodhin Yang or the Brahm Center or the Buddhist Fellowship in Singapore, why they don't start manufacturing high-tech meditation cushions. Look at the ones we have now. These are just so last century. Imagine with a bit of innovation what you can do to a meditation cushion. How many people do meditation mindfulness these days? It's a huge market. So my design for a meditation cushion, you have separate compartments and you have a remote. So if your backside needs to be lifted up, you press one button and the air sort of expands and expands, lifting you up. If you need to lift your knee up because it's too much, another button, this cushion lifts up. That one, if it's a bit sore, you press another little button, it gives you a massage. If you're too cold, you can put it in, it warms up. I remember going to Japan. And Korea, and they have these toilet seats, which are so high tech. You press one button, it warms the toilet seat. Another button, and sort of it sprays water just in the right place. And you can adjust the temperature, you know, hot, medium, cold, and also the pressure on it. When you give a big wash or just a very gentle wash, I don't know about you, but you know, being a very simple Indian monk, it is a boring lifestyle. When I first went to one of those toilets, I spent about 20 minutes on there just playing around. To see what else it could do. And then I've never done that, I did it. Just didn't sit on it, see, just press the button, see how far the water is. High-tech toilet seats, how about high-tech meditation cushions? And even if you really want to do one which is very, very popular, you press another button and you get out a latte. That's the best way to overcome
smart and talk through meditation. How many of you during meditation get really tired, bored, you love a little coffee? So just press the button, it just comes out just from the little compartment there. So that's my design of high-tech meditation cushions, and I give it away because I'm into business on making money. All my ideas I share with others. Anyway. Anyway, where was I? Oh yeah, I was talking about meditation. But in order to get your body comfortable, the best you possibly can, you need to put your legs out, fine, please do that. Stretch your legs. So make it really as comfortable as you possibly can. But there's only so much you can do with your body. It always has some aches and pains, itches, too hot, too cold. So you get so far, that's good enough. And then you focus inside. If you're watching a movie on TV, you can watch that movie or that football match, and you don't even feel your body. You're focused on something else. That's also important in meditation. After a while, when they're peaceful enough, you can focus on our breathing. The reason we focus on breathing, why breath meditation is the most common meditation in all Buddhist traditions, is because even if we don't choose to watch the breath is one of the last things moving. When your body is perfectly still, the breath is still. That is why everything else turns off. The body is what we can watch. So the breath is what we watch. Last thing moving. When I meditate, this is honest, what I do, I never go looking for my breath. I just calm everything down. Sit down, relax my body, make sure it's comfortable. Watch my peaceometer just to calm things down, let go of past, let go of future. I'm in this moment, nothing really going on, except my breath is natural. The only thing with me. So you observe your breath. You don't go looking for it. You don't go controlling it. You just hang out with your breath. Now once you get to that stage of the meditation, you start to become aware of your breathing. There's many little tricks, many little pieces of advice which will help you be able to focus on your breath for long periods of time so the deeper meditation experiences can occur. One of those things is, please don't treat your breath like a slave, like a maid who cleans up for you. Treat it as a friend. Because if you mistreat it, come on, breath, come in, go out, short breath, long breath, medium breath, come on, breathe out one nostril, out another nostril. That is controlling the breath. It is treating it like it's something you own. Now, those of you who've been with bosses who are always telling you what to do, you don't enjoy going to work. If you're in a relationship, your partner is always so controlling of you, it's not much of a relationship. It's very unpleasant for you. So imagine the relationship you have with your breathing. Why is it you can't watch your breath very long? Why is it your mind wanders away? Why? It's because it can't wait to get away from you. The relationship you have to your breath is a very bad one. Control it. As for me, my brother and I are such close friends. We've had such wonderful times together. That when I have the opportunity to stop speaking and I close my eyes and I find my breathing, it's like my breath says, Shabwara, you're back again, woohoo, let's hang out together. It's not that I have to force it. We enjoy one another's company. That is why it's so easy to stay with my breath. And if my breath wants to run away somewhere, off you go. When you finish, come back. It always comes back again very quickly. If you keep a bird in a cage, with the cage door always locked, then one day you're going to, by accident, by mistake, leave that cage door open. And that bird is going to fly away and never come back. But if your birdcage is a very pleasant, comfortable, joyful place with really nice food and you love that bird so much, the bird will fly away. It will always come back because it loves in that little cage. You don't need a door or a gate on it. That is the way we meditate. We don't need to hold our breath, to let it go, be kind, and your breath will always like to stay with you. Kindness is the glue which makes couples stick together. Be kind to one another, be respect one another. Controlling
is what forces couples apart. It's also what forces you away from your people. So when you actually learn how to meditate, you're not just learning how to meditate, you're learning about life and relationships. It's the relationship you have to your breath is usually the problem. So we're kind to others. Nice breath. Thank you for coming to visit me. You can disappear if you want. But I'm so happy to see you here. Those sorts of attitudes means that your mind engages with the breath. Because it's that engaging with the breath, not through force, but through the wisdom, power of kindness, what happens next is that that's all that you are aware of, just breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out. If you're with a good friend, it's easy to spend time with them. You don't need to control it. The breath just stays. Because of kindness. What happens next is the juicy parts of the meditation, the really interesting parts, which I always like to focus on. I get quite bored with this naughty parts of meditation, just trying to get people to sit still for half an hour. Let's get to the real nice stuff. We really get a lot of happiness, joy, and big things start to happen. So once you can be with your breath, because you are not doing very much, you don't need, your metabolism goes way down. And because it goes way down, you don't need so much oxygen. Because you don't need so much oxygen, you don't need to breathe so much. Now I found this out because I was almost forced to when I was with Ajahn Chah 42 years ago. In this country of Thailand, but not in nice beach places, in the middle of the jungles, in northeast Thailand when there were still jungles there. And we just started, that was one of the first 6 months to this monastery, Wat Banana Cha. For those of you who want a little bit of a secret, it was never called Wat Banana Cha at first because most of the monks were Americans. They called, Ajahn Chah called it Wat Ba America Wat. That was his name for it. But anyway, I was there at first and there was no buildings there at all. Nothing, not a toilet, not a place to eat, not a place to sleep. You sleep under the trees on the ground. And you see these snakes slither past you as you were laying down. Venomous snakes, dangerous snakes. But for some reason you were never scared. Don't know why. But anyway, that in the evening time, Ajahn Chah would come from Wapapong, 36 kilometers away. He'd come over to give some support to a new monastery. He'd come and give a talk and we would meditate under the trees. From 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., a 2-hour meditation every night. No cushions, no chairs, just on the ground. And these days there wouldn't be any problem for me, because these days I don't need a cushion. I've got my own upholstery, I call it. Fat bottoms do not need cushions. But in those days, I was skin and bones. I was just making up for, now I'm making up for how thin I was when I was young. And worse, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. in the evening time, that is the time the mosquitoes come out looking for their dinner. And those mosquitoes in Thailand, in the jungles, there were so many of them. And Westerner. As a Westerner, I was in some of the villages, the first white man the village had ever seen. Absolutely true.
no Westerner would go up to that part of town. There's nothing to see there. It was very boring. So, some of the villages I went to later on, I remember one village, I was not just white man, a white monk. And they were putting alms food in my bowl. And it's a Thai tradition, when you put alms food in a monk's bowl, you're not supposed to look at him. And they couldn't resist, because the first white man, and I looked at them, and their eyes were looking up, their jaws were opening, and as they put rice in, they weren't looking where it was going, it fell right out of my bowl. And the dog loved me, because they ate so much rice that morning, I hardly got anything. Because I was the first white man they saw. But this is the first white man that we must give hopes, the dying of. And I often say that whenever you get a new cuisine in any locality, it's always popular. So I can imagine those mosquitoes telling their friends, "Hey guys, a new Western restaurant has opened up in this place. Western food. Check it out." And they did. Hundreds of them. And also, I don't think it's the same in Singapore, and even Malaysia, but in Thailand, this country has been Buddhist for centuries. So those mosquitoes, they have learned, they have evolved the knowledge to know if they see someone with a bald head and a brown nose, it's that same dinner. They don't need to be worried at all because they know they cannot be swatted. So they've learned that. They pass it on to the next generations and the next soul. These mosquitoes, they will take advantage of us, of our kindness and compassion. Many times you wanted to swat them, but you couldn't. If you're not eating it, don't try this, it's a waste of time. There's a monkey, see them on your hand, you just give them a little nudge. No, come on, go away. I'm not going to swat you, but fair's fair. Go and get something else. No one's given a little nudge. They just go up a little bit and come down and do another drill hole. Never want to get two itches for one. And other times you just watch them. Okay, come on, get it over with. And they walk right in, they put their nose down. Okay, come on, take as much as you want, out of compassion, I've got plenty of blood. It's okay, take it. You know what the blooming mosquitoes would do? They put their nose down, and they would take it up again. They didn't like that, so they went off to another one. They were just so fussy, they did about four or five exploratory drill holes before they found the sweet spot, what they liked. They were just so incredibly fussy, those mosquitoes. Taking advantage of our compassion. But they were driving crazy sometimes, especially when, no exaggeration, 60 or 70 mosquitoes on your head and your arm at the same time. That was really itchy. And almost impossible to endure. No exaggeration, 60 or 70 at the same time. I would count them. I had a competition with one of my old friends who could count the most. So how did he get them? See, I've got 50, I've got 55. But it was really hard to interrupt. So what I had to do, I had to really focus on my breathing. Just watching my breath go in, breath go out, go in, go out. Until my body vanished, disappeared. Couldn't feel the body, all you knew was your breath. Just like when you watch a movie. All you have in your mind is a movie, you can't feel your legs or bottom anymore. The rest of the body vanishes when you focus on things. It is a little technique which I noticed. Because I travel a lot, I use similes from my life. If you look at the screen in the, on the seat back in front of you, for the in-flight safety video, next time you fly, check it out. You watch the screen when the in-flight safety demonstration turns on. When you first watch the screen, you can see the upholstery from the seat in front of you and even the edges of the screen. But after a few seconds, the upholstery and the plastic edge of the screen vanishes. You need to focus in. Just Google Earth, zooming in. Your mind is doing the same. Just enough you can see the screen. Not what's outside the screen. Everything else disappears. It's called focusing. And that's what we do. We focus just on the breath. So everything else vanishes. Even if you can't feel your body, it's gone. This is when you focus in on the screen of the TV. The edges vanish. Next time you see something on your iPhone, it's a tiny little screen. But when you really focus in on it, the edges vanish. What's beyond the edges vanish. It's this wonderful skill of the human mind to focus, and everything else disappears. So this is why we watch the breath. We focus on that, everything else disappears. But also, I was really surprised why it was that after I focused on my breath and couldn't feel mosquitoes on my skin, why after the meditation I looked at my arm, there's hardly any mosquito bites there. Straight away I thought, psychic powers. When you have deep meditations, the mosquitoes leave you alone. But as years and years later, I discovered the reason why. Mosquitoes only are attracted to the carbon dioxide coming out of your pores. The more carbon dioxide which you emit, the more you are attracting mosquitoes. You ever notice that in some people, they walk through a forest, some people get so many mosquitoes, some people don't get hardly any grass at all. Why is that? And a lot of it is because the people who worry a lot, who think a lot, have a high metabolism. They're burning up so much oxygen and emitting so much carbon dioxide that you're attracting the mosquitoes. It's one of those other examples. If you're afraid of mosquitoes, your metabolism goes up, more carbon dioxide comes out, more mosquitoes come. What you're afraid of, you make happen. If you're really calm, if a mosquito bites, that's fine. You're not worried, you're peaceful and calm, your metabolism goes down, which means not much carbon dioxide comes out, which means you become invisible to the mosquitoes. And that's what was happening to me. Because I wasn't worrying, I was just focusing on my breath and really calming down, not thinking. And then my mind was so peaceful and still, my body was so calm, I was hardly metabolizing at all. Hardly any carbon dioxide was coming out, and hardly any oxygen was needed. My breath calmed down. The less you do, the more you need, the less you need to breathe. So your breath calms down. You stop worrying, you stop tensing up, you stop thinking, you stop doing stuff, you really relax. Your breath becomes very soft and very slow. You get it peaceful. So you become aware of your breath, and the breath becomes soft and very smooth. Now the other thing which happens, which is an important part of mindfulness, is that the less you do, the more still you become, the more energy your mindfulness has. Your mindfulness grows in its strength. You become more aware. You see more, experience more, you can feel more. Sometimes when people meditate, they come to a stage and they're becoming peaceful, but it's like their body is just crawling with ants, it's itchy. They've got like power coming up and down in their body, what's going on? Sometimes people say, they can smell fragrant smells in the meditation hall. Is this heavenly beings have come to visit? What's going on? No. All is happening is your senses are becoming alive. You're becoming more aware, more sensitive to things. Even because I know how much Singapore people love their food. The food begins to taste
more delicious. Because your sense of taste is becoming enhanced and amplified. I know Angie and Peter, you know, the first thing I take when I go to breakfast is the baked beans. I love baked beans. I grew up on baked beans. Such a simple food. But the last time I went on my meditation, which I have 2 weeks holiday a year. You know what I do when I have my holiday, a real holiday? I go in my cave and don't come out. 2 weeks in my cave. Oh, that's bliss. That's my holiday. And if any of you come, I'm sorry, I'm not coming out of my cave. The monks know that. They can go. Kill each other, go become Muslims, go and just get married to the nuns. I don't care what they do for 2 weeks, it's your problem. I'm on your holiday. So I remember, as soon as I come off retreat, to count the monks, which you have to really let go, otherwise you can't have any rest at all. Well, the last time, was it September, October, when I came off retreat, you know, just in the evening, the following morning, had some breakfast, and the first piece of food I had after coming off my retreat was just a spoon of baked beans. Wow! It was an explosion of taste. I never tasted baked beans as so incredibly powerful. The richness of the tomatoes. It was just sweet but a little bit of acid, a little sour there, and the texture was just incredible. And I was really getting off on just one spoon of baked beans. It was hard to continue on to the next. That actually happened. It's crazy. My mindfulness was so incredibly strong. There was so many tastes and flavors in one spoon of a simple food like baked beans. Wow! It blew my mind. And actually, in the Dharma, where I could go, wow! And I said, what do you want about? What's going on? Crazy monk. But that is what happens. Your mindfulness is so strong, everything gets like polished. The flowers look more bright. The smells get enhanced. You look at the ocean. Wow! It's more brilliant than you've ever seen before. And this is not taking any drugs. This is natural. Mindfulness gets strengthened. I admit that that's a natural occurrence. You can't fake it, you can't force them. It happens when you really relax. When you start getting into stillness. That is why you're just watching your breathing. And it's incredible. The delightful breath. Wow, just one breath. It's incredible. There's all this air, this oxygen, this life-sustaining chemicals is coming into your body from the air. People tell me it's a gift from all the flowers and the trees and the bushes. Everything which is green creates some oxygen for you to breathe in. You're breathing in life. It's not a small thing, it's a huge thing. And just one breath becomes amazing, delightful. And you breathe it out. You get to the stage of the delightful breath. When you become still, you start to get happiness and joy. That is what I work hard for, to give you that experience. Teaching the Dharma, teach it this way, teach it that way, people don't really get it anyway. But teaching you to experience happiness. Not from any drugs, not from sex. Not from alcohol. Natural form of happiness born from stillness. And the stillness, the breath. Amazing. There was an English poet called William Blake, 17th century. He also was an artist. Some of the stuff he painted was amazing. But this particular poem He wrote to see a world in a grain of sand, a heaven in a wild flower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand, and eternity in an hour. It always struck me when I was a student when I first read that, an English poet, to see a world in a grain of sand, a heaven in a wild flower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand, eternity in the short time I can have. That really struck me, that someone who somehow or other knew something about meditation. Because that's what happens. When you really become peaceful and still, everything becomes so beautiful. Just like your kids are always beautiful for you. But your partner, are they always beautiful? Sometimes you get so upset with them, so angry with them. Why? Because you're going too fast to appreciate just how beautiful people are, how kind they are, how amazing is this planet Earth. So fast, you take it all for granted. Go slow, and even your breath becomes beautiful. How much like a glass of pure water. See the spark in somebody's eyes. See the kindness in their heart. You're really aware of mindfulness. Amazing. Free happiness. Free bliss. Just there. When your senses wake up. That's why, if you really get into this meditation, it's that. Thank you, all my teachers, especially Ajahn Chah, for teaching me how to be happy. Real happiness, deep stuff. And this is only the start of bliss in the house. Delightful breath, because you're still. And the breath becomes so incredibly peaceful. It stops, it disappears, you can't find it anymore. And that's the last part of your five senses. You know, sometimes that you have all these anecdotes of people who have out-of-body experiences. They pass away only to come back again. And those people who come back again, they always tell when they go, it's always beautiful, it's wonderful when the five senses stop. Now, there's another. Angie was talking about this lady, I think she was a Singaporean or Indian girl, the one who wrote one of the best-selling books, some movie or something. Who was it about, had an out-of-body experience a couple of years ago, wrote a best-selling book about it? Yeah, and even Bojani. The amazing coincidence is that it's only in the last 3 or 4 years that in Serpentine, which is a little village next to our monastery, only recently they opened up a doctor's surgery. And the doctor there, I think it's Waters, or Mr. Waters, Dr. Waters, he was Anita's doctor, who saw her through that. Really weird coincidence. He knows all about her. Knows more about her story than you read in the book. Because he's the local doctor of the Buddhist monks in Serpentine. Weird coincidences. Why of all the doctors in the world, why is he working next to the Buddhist monks? Strange, but true. The way the world works, coincidences. But, anyway, this is what happens with your mind. You're so peaceful, so still, joyful. Your mind then. Mind appears when your body vanishes. And what you find is joyful, beautiful thing. This thing we call the mind. Now, I'll teach you a little bit of Sanskrit, Pali. That mind is called Chitta. In Sanskrit, Chitra.
But those of you who know the north of Malaysia, there's a town called Chitra, named after Prince Chitra, because Chitra also means beautiful. It has those two meanings. Chitra means beautiful, also means the mind. It's no coincidence that in those ancient languages that we realize people experience this mind. It's a wonderful thing, beautiful thing, very powerful too. It is an effort in our lives. And nobody is, and we can work with it and enhance it. It's amazing the power we have over this body, other stuff as well. But just to have the sheer happiness of that. And understand why it is people search for so much pleasure when in dangerous things like, you know, methamphetamines, getting drunk, you know, having partners all over the place. Why do people do that? Because they don't know anything better. You know something about the joy of meditation. I'm a monk, been a monk for 42, 43 years, a good monk, I don't break my rules. Some people ask me, Pastor Ralph, how can you do that? Have you ever thought of disrobing, getting married to starting a family? I told a few people recently, make them laugh. I'm perfectly safe, by the way. But it was about a year ago, over in Perth, one of the women over there came up and said, Pastor Ralph, have you ever thought of disrobing? I said, no. She said, well, if you do, here's my number. Where's the time? So even if we won't, you get offers. But no, no, no way. I'm not smart than that. But you know what, sir? You're having such a great time just meditating on a beautiful, peaceful time in your life. So I told all the other monks about that. They wanted to find out who she was. But I said, no, Rob, it's totally safe. You can see if I'm messing around. The signs are there. I don't mess around. But the nice thing was that you have this beautiful happiness and joy in your meditation. There's no happiness which is sweeter than that. So part of meditation is when you have to be so still that things vanish. When they vanish, amazing stuff happens. It's not hard. It's gorgeous, it's beautiful. Those wonderful states of mind. You get to know what this mind is. And then, honestly, you're not so concerned about bodies anymore. Bodies are, you know, they're just vehicles. When you drive a Jaguar, you drive a Honda, or a little motorbike, or a skateboard, it's just a vehicle, that's all. What's really important is the driver. Doesn't matter how fast a car you have, if you haven't got a skillful driver, you're going to get a crash. So the driver of the mind is the most important. I know what that is for yourself. The heart of all religions and spirituality. This is how you do it. Not belief, not brainwashing, learning how to be so still that things vanish. So when you are meditating, if things disappear, please don't be afraid. I just, even years ago, Singapore, when he was on retreat, came up to me and said, Pastor Ralph, I need to speak to you now, emergency. Why? What's wrong? I was meditating and I couldn't feel my hands. They disappeared. Something's going wrong. Oh, I said, it's supposed to happen. Let your whole body disappear. Hands is, you know, start. But how about your arms and your back disappearing? How about your head disappearing? Yeah, it just vanished completely. Oh, what joy. Hard to get siblings, but I remember a sibling from English literature, the Alice in Wonderland, when she came across the Cheshire Cat. If any of you remember that. That Cheshire Cat is a species of cat with just the way it's born, it looks like it's always smiling. And this Cheshire Cat with a big grin on its face appeared in a tree and then suddenly vanished. Then appeared again. Then suddenly vanished. And Alice said to the Cheshire Cat that it's really giving me a headache. Why are you coming and vanishing and appearing so suddenly? It's very, very upsetting. Or something like that. And the Cheshire Cat said, okay, I will vanish slowly then, out of kindness to Alice. And so the Cheshire Cat started to vanish. First its tail vanished, then its paws vanished, leaving only its body and head. Then its body vanished, leaving only the head. Then its ears vanished, and then its whiskers vanished, and then its head vanished, leaving only the smile. And that's where Alice said, "This is getting curiouser and curiouser. I've often seen a cat without a smile, but I've never before seen a smile without a cat." The wonderful English by Lewis Carroll, Charles Boston. He was also a mathematician as well. Really weird. But, beautiful use of English. To see a cat without a smile, or a person without a smile, is quite common. To see a smile without a person. That's what happens in meditation. The body vanishes, but not the smile. The happiness and joy, that stays. So it's all about disappearing, vanishing. If you know that, and things start to duck over, because you still can't see sound, you can't hear stuff because nothing's moving, you can't smell, you can't taste, you see the breath, most things going, so the breath goes. Wow. Let it happen. Don't stop this natural process. It's going to happen sooner or later. Really enjoy what happens next. That's some of what meditation is about. So now, I'm going to allow you to vanish. It's 10 o'clock and time for letting go. In the toilets. And also I'm going to have a cup of tea. So please come back in, what is it, 20 minutes, half an hour, and we do another meditation before I go for my lunch. So, toilet time. Let go. Remember, there's always a queue for the toilet, so please, first come, first goes in there. A few people have got a head start, everybody else. The lady in green is catching up. Okay.